Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe here with you this weekend. Happy to have you on board for this program. We have a guest waiting, so I'm going to rush through real quick the introduction to the program here and all the gratitude that we have to give to the folks making it possible. I want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program to exist. The management occasionally disagrees with the content, and their sponsors more than occasionally disagree, but they have our backs nonetheless, so we appreciate that. We also want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing this program. Main Street Radio Network can be found at mainstreetradionetwork.com. They are also on Facebook, Main Street Radio Network, and on Twitter at Main Street Radio. And you can find this show on social media as well, GetterGETTR.com at Silker Joe Show. But while you're out there, don't forget to check out the Al and Nathan Show, which I guest host occasionally. It's kind of the flagship show of the Main Street Radio Network. They do it five times a week, whereas we only do it once. So you can give them some love, AlandNathan.com, or on Twitter at AlandNathan. All right, all that out of the way. On to the guest here. We have Melanie Collett. She is host of Money Talk with Melanie. She is a member of the National Center for Public Policy Research's Project 21 and was a vice chairwoman with the National Federation of Republican Women. Melanie, happy to have you. How are you today?
Thank you for having me. I'm awesome.
All right, glad to have you. So I'm just going to now hammer a nail in the coffin of using this segment as an evergreen segment and point out this is Black History Month. And I understand the one of the themes being declared this year is Black resistance. What's that about?
It certainly is. And you know, I found that it was disappointing because usually, at least typically, I have found that they usually have an encouraging theme for the month. But this year they chose Black resistance. And, you know, one of the things that they say I'm trying to remember the name of the organization that did it. But one of the things that they say, that they point out, is like, you know, the continued racism that Black people face, as if we have not gone very far since the time of the Civil Rights Movement or since the time of slavery. And that is simply not true. And I'm very, very tired of hearing people and organizations, and actually the organization that sets the theme every year is called the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History. And, you know, putting it in a way that makes us put upon and you know, victims. I don't like it. The fact of the matter is that we've overcome very much. We have become very successful despite whatever our humble beginnings might have been. And even post-slavery, this is the case. So, you know, I found that theme super disappointing. You know, it just talks about us struggling and that, you know, it's been nonstop since the days of segregation and discrimination. Like, you can't deny the successes that Black folks have had and continue to have. And one of the reasons in some areas we are not successful, in my opinion, is because we're continuing to speak this kind of, or organizations, I should say, are continuing to speak this kind of victimhood into our children in the classroom through CRT and through projects like the 1619 Project.
Yeah, it seems just contrary entirely to the point of Black History Month to celebrate the contributions African Americans have made to American society, as well as celebrate civil rights victories. If you have no civil rights victories and the whole theme of the month is Black resistance, then what does that do to the history? It kind of diminishes everything that was done in the past.
Exactly. It sure does. And what I would really rather see is us speaking into our children. I feel like the context of Black History Month tends to be, look at all these Black people and all these great things that Black people did that white people tend to ignore. Instead of saying, look at all these things that Black people have done and you can do it too. Let's look and examine their lives and see how they got this done. Because that person looks just like you and you can do it too. That is the kind of victory, in my opinion, we should be instilling into our children and the kind of conversations we should be having with other Black people. Is that it can be done. You do not need the almighty hand of the white man in order to succeed, which to me, like I said, is, you know, I say this all the time. It's the ultimate mind bleep. It's the ultimate racism. If you can enslave the mind, then you have you can keep people down. You can control them. And it absolutely is a form of enslaving people's minds. And the fact that there's so many black people that play into this and that kind of spread that word like a horrible virus or cancer is really disappointing, especially during Black History Month.
And unfortunately, there's an entire industry that profits on that mentality. Many civil rights activists out there just in it for profit. And we saw that with the Black Lives Matter folks, their leadership making millions of dollars, indeed, not contributing a single cent to the people they claim to help.
Absolutely. It's absolutely true. And it's the intellectual dishonesty for me. You don't hear anyone stepping up and stepping out and absolutely vilifying organizations like BLM when they got caught red-handed not helping black folks. Who has called them out? Did Al Sharpton call them out? Did Jesse Jackson call them out? Any of the other Van Jones, any of the other, you know, race-baiting folks that are always talking about how the black people are being done wrong? What about when other black people do us wrong? Why can that not get called out? And as long as we're talking about it, why is it that we can't also celebrate the white folks that helped us during slavery, during the Civil War, during the Civil Rights Movement? There were white folks that died too on our behalf. But people like to pretend, people who like to keep this division going, like to pretend that that's not the case.
Yeah, it's total erasure of anyone's contribution to history. Is it also part of this just they want to be the ones remembered? And so to do that, you have to erase people who achieved much greater than they ever could?
Oh, it's certainly a part of that is power. And that's been going on since we arrived in the United States. That has been going on among our people. And since, really, if we talk about it, since before we left Africa, before we were sold by our fellow Africans, and you know, slaves being bought and sold now as we speak, and no one's talking about that. You know, we live in the most wonderful nation in the world and have the most freedom and the most opportunity, and all many people seem to do is complain about how bad it is.
Yeah, it makes you wonder how immigrants coming in from Africa, why are they doing that if this is such a horrific nation, right?
Exactly. I find it mind-blowing. And whenever I hear someone who is not from here, like one time I was in a conversation with a total stranger who was from some part of Africa, and he, I don't know how long he had been here, but he started talking about how ridiculous our gun laws are and the fact that we're allowed to have guns. And I, you know, because I was trying to be nice, I wanted to say so badly, I'm going to guess where you're from, nobody has guns, and that's why you're here. Because you have no say. You have absolutely no say in what goes on in your country because none of you are armed. And that's, you know, the first thing that government does when they want to break people down and control the people is they disarm them. So,
and I just go ahead. I was just about to say, I find it kind of weird, you know, just about to segue into a little bit on gun control, how some of the Democratic proposals, like you had Beto O'Rourke, for example, on the presidential trail, talking about how he's going to demand confiscation of all firearms. Well, this is a part going on at the same time as Black Lives Matter, police brutality is hitting the thing. Who's he going to send to African-American houses to get those guns? Police officers.
Right. And good luck, by the way. Things like that, policies like that is why the founding fathers wanted to make sure that we had access to guns because I think they had the foresight to understand that the government could get too powerful, and we needed to be in a position as citizens to defend ourselves against that kind of tyranny.
Now, we got about a minute left here, so I'm going to put you on the spot. In the spirit of Black History Month, is there a particular individual you think is not remembered as much as they should be during this time? You know, Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, we give them a lot of credit, Barack Obama too, first African-American president. But is there somebody who's kind of slipped through the cracks that you can think of just right now?
There isn't a particular, like one. I'm not sure that she has slipped through the cracks. I think she's way underrated. She's one of my heroes, is Condoleezza Rice. And, you know, she doesn't get a lot of fanfare, but she certainly has accomplished a lot. I mean, being the Secretary of State was the least of her accomplishments. She speaks six languages. She's a concert pianist. She has a doctorate. She's you know, and no one raises her up during Black History Month as an example. She grew up in the segregated South and has accomplished so much. So she's one of my heroes and somebody that I always think about.
All right, Melanie Kohler, appreciate you being on the Silker Joe Show today. And again, listeners, she is host of Money Talk with Melanie, so you can check that out when it airs. But we have more Silker Joe Show after this break.
The new Mayo Clinic diet has been named among the top diets by U.S. News & World Report. Dr. Donald Hensrud, medical director of the Mayo Clinic Healthy Living Program, explains what makes their program so effective.
Our new Mayo Clinic diet, built by a team of doctors and medical experts, focuses less on counting calories and more on empowering users with the knowledge and ability to maintain a healthy weight.
Members get access to exclusive content and videos from real Mayo Clinic doctors, healthy recipes, tracking tools, and the popular Habit Optimizer that helps users substitute old unhealthy habits with healthier ones, all through a mobile app.
Instead of fad diets or crash diets that rarely work for very long, our book and online program and app helps you adopt principles for a healthier way of life, which is really the secret to long-term success.
Curious to know how healthy your diet is? The Mayo Clinic has an easy 3-minute quiz. Go to mayoclinicdiet.com to find out.
Vitamin B12 is important for supporting not only our metabolism, but also our energy levels. Our brain and our nerves need certain vitamins like B12 in order to function properly. Even if you're eating all the healthy foods like fruits and vegetables and getting, you know, great sources of protein, it's sometimes the case that you can become deficient in one or more nutrient, and that's where supplements can be helpful. So if you want to support your B12 levels, Jarrow's methyl B12 is a great supplement to consider to optimize your B12 levels. This type of B12 is recognized by the body, so it's delivered to your cells more efficiently. It's also been shown that it is a great way to make sure that you're getting a highly absorbed form of vitamin B12 and one that's going to be retained better than other types of B12. You can learn more at jarrow.com.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Adopt US Kids for multiple choice parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve, it's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. We are joined now by Peter Balawanian. He is producer of the recent documentary, The Desire to Live, which has won over 130 awards last year so far and is up for more. So, Peter, appreciate you being on the Silker Joe Show. How are you today?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you very much for having me.
So, this award-winning documentary, would you enlighten our listeners on it, please?
Sure thing. We started this documentary right after the war of 2020 between Armenia and Azerbaijan. And the documentary basically covers the post-war effect on the people in the region and how they struggle till today, especially with the blockade that's on its way right now, 58 days, surrounded basically by no entry, no exit, no food coming in, no medication. So basically there's a humanitarian crisis going on at this time.
It seems to me to be almost an attempted genocide of this very tiny Christian minority in the middle of the country and, well, maybe toward near the border, because they've cut off all support that these people have. And are they doing it just for the copper mines and all that that's underneath them?
Well, at first I thought it was just land territorial dispute because Azerbaijan was upset that they lost the war in 91 to 94. And then once I started digging more and more, I realized that the mines play a big part of this. And it's not just copper. It's all these rare earths that everybody's in demand for, basically. And these mines have them. And they got their eyes on them. So now they're doing everything they can to get all the people in that region out of that region so they can get their hands on the mines.
Now, what's emboldening Azerbaijan to do this? What kind of support are they getting from the international community? You think they'd be getting nothing but condemnations?
Oh, actually the opposite. When they attacked in 2020, they had this full support of Turkey, military aid, commanders on the ground. They were getting drones from Israel. They were getting support from Pakistan. I mean, they've gotten quite a bit of support from one side. And then on the other side, Armenia was pretty much left high and dry. Russia, which has been kind of their abusive brother protecting them for the last few decades, really went on the side of Azerbaijan and now has become an Azerbaijan ally. So Armenia has been left all alone with very little military on its own to protect its own borders, let alone this little indigenous land outside of the border.
So at this time where NATO is very concerned about Russia's actions in Ukraine, you have a NATO member, Turkey, siding with the Russians in a genocide for copper mines and rare earth metals.
That's what it seems like. Right now, these people, there are about 120,000 people, and literally they have one road in, one road out, which is called the Lachin Corridor, and they have a blockade on that corridor. The Russian peacekeepers that were part of the Treaty of 2020, we're supposed to secure that Lachin Corridor and the security of the people. And now they're acting more like a prison warden, not letting anybody out, holding people in captive, and then not letting any humanitarian come in. So yeah, it's a big crisis going on, and we don't know what's going to happen day to day, but something has to change.
Right. And of all the times that we would take sides in this, why not now, especially since Russia is involved? That seems like a geopolitically smart move to make.
Well, Aliyev, which is the president of Azerbaijan, has used propaganda for the last 10, 15 years to make it sound like Russia is a part of Armenia and Russia is on the other side. Meanwhile, their whole goal is ethnic cleansing of the region. And, you know, they're not going to stop there either. They're going to find this Christian country, which is called Armenia, right in between Turkey and Azerbaijan, and they're going to try to wipe it out. They've said it before in their speeches. They've They talked about this. They think that that region should be all a Turkic, region altogether. And, you know, they're not going to stop until there is serious help from the West for this to end.
Now, in order to raise awareness for this, you have produced The Desire to Live, this documentary about the situation. What sort of reception have you had from it?
We started with the web series right after the war started, and I was airing that on YouTube and still do. I have 3 full seasons of that. But after the second season, I realized that I needed the festival circuits, which that's why we made the feature documentary film. And once it started, I didn't know how it was going to be accepted, but I was happy to see that a lot of the festivals officially selected the film. And then we started winning awards, and more awards than I even expected, I even imagined. And as that continued, I decided to use the festival circuit as a road to spreading awareness. I figured if people are accepting it in the festivals and they're giving it a viewing, why not continue on? And I started covering different cities and different countries. And so far, we got into 42 different countries, over 80 cities it's been officially selected in. And right now it's won 136 awards from about 70 festivals. I'm not sure about that, but somewhere around there. So it's done really well with it, and it still continues on doing. And then now the web series has also won awards. You know, it's all about spreading awareness with this project. Everything I do is about getting the word out, getting people to notice the region and pay attention to it, and then keep your eyes on it, because if we take our eyes off of it, it's going to disappear.
And it sort of plays into how you design this documentary. It's not narrator-centric. It's focused on the imagery of what's going on over there, right?
Correct. The director, Mariam Avedisyan, is a native of Stepanakert, born and raised in the Artsakh region. She does a wonderful job, a brilliant job, getting the people to talk, to tell their stories. You never hear the questions asked. It's just a dialogue with people talking about their experiences, and you feel like you're sitting right there in their living rooms listening to them. And that's how this documentary feels. And it's close to the heart. It's a human spirit story. You know, it's really, really beautiful imagery, because the landscape is beautiful. It's the highlands. It's the Armenian highlands. You know, they've been living there for centuries and centuries in this beautiful land. Very tough, the terrain. Very difficult to live in for anybody to want to live in, but they don't want to move. They don't know anywhere else to live. And basically that goes on into the story and how they tell people that this is the land they want their grandchildren to grow up in.
Yes, because in many regions you see this, where people can trace their lineage back hundreds, thousands of years sometimes. So why would we try to force them off like that, except to get to the resources underneath them? So where do you see this going from here with your campaign for this?
Well, it took a twist when the blockade started, because for 2 years, all I was doing is spreading awareness, because I knew the treaty wasn't going to hold, and I knew there was something looming right over their head. And thus now, over the winter, they cut off gas, they cut off electricity, access, medication. There's about 30,000 children there now. They can't go to school. There's hardly anything to eat left, because there are people that live off the land. And in the winter, they usually bring in food through the Lachin Corridor to Armenia. And Armenia has been the only country, they're predominantly all Armenians living there. But the Artsakh region was always disputed a region between Azerbaijan and Armenia. So therefore, there has always been a struggle to maintain.
Well, I'm afraid we'll have to cut you off, sir. We're coming to heartbreak. Folks, more Silk Radio Show after the break.
Since Hurricane Andrew devastated South Florida, that storm marked the beginning of the Home Depot being a hub for help during disasters, a tradition that continues today. To commemorate those efforts, the company is releasing a new film called Hope Builds. Briar Waterman, Senior Director, Creative Design of the Home Depot.
Drawing from interviews and using archive footage, we trace the origin, growth, and sophistication of the Home Depot's disaster relief efforts, demonstrating it is deeply connected to the values of the company and our unwavering support to our communities during their times of need. Whether it be a veteran in need or a community devastated by a natural disaster, Home Depot associates go beyond the job, beyond the 9-to-5, to make sure that their neighbors and communities are taken care of. This documentary is a prime example.
To learn more about the film or for help creating your emergency supply kit, visit your local Home Depot or thehomedepot.com/hopebills.
We definitely want to make sure that we don't overfeed our animals, because feeding our animals more is not love. You know, there's so many other ways you can show love, like throwing a ball and walking them and give them a little extra love.
The annual End Obesity Campaign by Hills is wonderful for a guy like me and Dr. Hodges, who are practicing veterinarians, because it's obesity, like you said, is one of those illnesses or conditions that we see most in the veterinary hospital. And it can be very difficult sometimes talking to clients about, you know, their patient being obese, you know. But Hills, with their campaign, have given us the tool to be able to get this message across. And it's something that they do annually. They've invested a lot of time, a lot of money into the research, into the pet food that we can use to help these animals that are obese.
So you can go to endpetobesity.com and you can learn a whole lot more about how you can actually use the love test, as well as learn more about Hills Pet Nutrition and ways to control your pet's weight.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs, and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Real quick, since we had the last segment, didn't have time to ask it. The documentary we were talking about, The Desire to Live, about the practically genociding of Christian peoples in Azerbaijan, you can find more about it at thedesiretolivedoc.com. That is thedesiretolivedoc.com. All right, moving on. this is how I wanted to introduce this segment before I had to wrap that up real quick. Let's have clips 4 and 1, please.
Congratulations to Chuck Schumer. Another, another term as Senate Minority Leader. I think you, only this time you have a slightly bigger majority, Mr. Leader. You're the majority leader. But American automobiles couldn't make enough cars because there weren't enough chips. Car prices went up. People got laid off. So did everything from refrigerators to cell phones.
Yep, that was Joe Biden's State of the Union address right there. He demoted the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer to Minority Leader. So good for him, I guess. Now there's more Republicans in the Senate by virtue of executive fiat. I don't know how Biden expected that to work. But also, this is the same Biden that expects cell phones and refrigerators to be laid off and thinks automobiles manufacture cars. So I guess in that kind of world, maybe the president does have power to somehow get rid of a Democrat senator and replace him with a Republican senator. But anyway, the State of the Union address is kind of a mess now. There are a lot of political stunts going on this year. Democrats, of course, complain about that. The trouble is, under Trump, they pulled a bunch of stunts themselves. I think this all really can be traced back to 2009. But Republicans will get blamed for ruining the State of the Union for everyone. With first Congressman Rick Wilson, when he called Obama a liar during his speech. And then just from there, each party started doing their own shenanigans, depending on who the president was and what they hated about them. You know, Pelosi tearing up Trump's speech, the squad yelling at him during his speech, and then now Republicans jeering Joe Biden. So I think about time maybe say the union addresses go back to what they originally were, where you just submit a report to Congress that nobody reads. that's all they used to be until they became PR stunts for a president and they were televised. So get back to the old tradition, I suppose. One stunt, though, the Democrats pulled was kind of disgusting, particularly disgusting, I should say, is they were all wearing these pro-abortion pins instead of American flags. That is, you know, how you have that little lapel pin that people wear with the American flag on it that you see a lot of politicians wearing to make themselves appear patriotic. Democrats replaced that with some sort of pro-abortion symbology. Just kind of goes along with they replace the American flag here with the pro-abortion pins. And we've seen videos leaked out from schools of teachers making the students pledge allegiance to the gay pride flag instead of the U.S. flag, openly mocking and spitting on America, its institutions that allow a free society, and its history of working towards a free society. It seems like they don't believe in this country. They believe in the DNC and its agenda, much like how China has done with their military, which instead of pledging allegiance to protect the country, they pledge allegiance to protect the political party. It's what we're seeing with the Democrats doing now, their agenda over country and agenda over you, the average citizen, who might not be part of that agenda. They serve themselves, not you. And they've done this. They've also routed a lot of people in the military, much the same way as China has, who doesn't believe in their political agenda. And this is how you get to the point where nearly half of Democrats think you should be in a concentration camp for being unvaccinated. There was a poll done, I mentioned on the Alan Nathan Show earlier this week, where it showed somewhere in the upper 40 percentile of Democrats believed that exactly should happen. If you are unvaccinated, you get put in a concentration camp until you are vaccinated. Which kind of explains the Biden administration's support for the Brazilian dictator right now, who is doing much the same thing. He is rounding up people, shoving them into basically concentration camps, and forcing them to be vaccinated while they're in there. And in fact, the Biden administration participated in getting this Brazilian dictator elected. This is the kind of man they want to lead countries, the kind of man that I assume they want to model their own administration after. And with that kind of thrust behind the Democrat Party, it's also no wonder that more than half of Democrats believe you should be arrested if you say things like the COVID vaccine has side effects and the COVID vaccine does not stop you from spreading COVID. That same poll that showed they wanted you in concentration camps for being unvaccinated also showed they want you to be arrested for saying the truth about the COVID vaccine, that there are side effects, that you will spread COVID even if you have the vaccine. arrested for spreading facts, which they refer to as misinformation and hate speech, and tell you that you should have no right to say these things and mock you for doing so. They actually do not understand why anyone would say something like COVID vaccines don't stop you from spreading COVID or AOC is an idiot. They have no clue. How dare you, you racist, that wants grandma to die. These views should be silenced. And when you complain about censorship and describe these facts that are censored, Democrats sneer at you and say this stuff is bigoted and should be censored. It's not at all bigoted. Real bigotry is Democrats at the Smithsonian saying blacks are inferior. But according to Democrats, you are a racist who should be censored and barred from having any employment if you disagree with that notion from the Smithsonian in 2020. Right in the middle of the BLM riots, the Smithsonian gets a bunch of black scholars and liberal scholars together and came out with that garbage, that blacks are inferior, or rather, that whites are evil for expecting blacks to be intelligent. And it like lists all these values, intelligence, hard work, courtesy, that are white supremacist values, and you are crazy and racist if you think blacks should have any of them. That's what they came out with in 2020, the Smithsonian, in America, of all places. This is hardly a straw man argument that I'm making, mind you. You can find Democrats anywhere. Politics are discussed online saying this. Listen to MSNBC for a few minutes and hear them say this, or find polls showing they believe in this. Now back to the abortion issue specifically, they tell you it's compassionate. These Democrats proudly supporting abortion on their collar, every last one of them, opposed the Born Alive bill. Know what that did? If an abortion fails to kill the child and the child is removed from the mother, you can't kill it. That's what the goal of the bill was. At this time, it is still legal to kill the child if it is outside the womb and if the initial attempt at an abortion failed. Now, Democrats are opposed to that. They say for the sake of compassion and women's health, that a baby outside the womb should be killed. Worse, if you don't think killing a baby outside the mother is compassion, they say you're sexist and shouldn't be allowed to talk and are rightly censored on social media for expressing these views. And they went and adorned themselves with jewelry to celebrate the killing of babies outside the womb, and 100 million Americans apparently agree with this because that's how many people roughly support the Democrat Party. It is insane the lengths that they are going to. Now, perhaps these people out there aren't supporting the party at large. Maybe they support only certain aspects of it, but you take the whole with the little. So, and the Democrats, boy, they are a bunch of holes, aren't they? So, it's disgusting, though, that they adorn themselves with jewelry to celebrate the killing of babies outside the womb, because that is their most recent victory, according to them, on abortion, when they defeated this Born Alive bill. This bill that preserves the life of people outside the womb. Like, even if the abortion is for a woman's health, once the baby is outside the womb, the woman is no longer in danger from the baby unless, like, the kid is radioactive or something, which presents serious problems and is a senseless hypothetical. There is no way within the normal realm of probability that a child outside the womb would be a health danger to the parent. So why are they saying that you should kill it for women's rights and women's health when it's outside the womb? And this isn't the first time that Democrats have advocated for that. Oh, no. Now, they are staunch supporters of killing babies outside the womb if they survive abortions, but they also believe that you should have up to like about a 2-month period where you can see if you want the baby and if not, get rid of it. They've been advocating for that for 10, 15 years now. We're told that it's the extremists advocating for it, but then again, the extremists are the ones in Congress right now who celebrate killing babies outside the womb by putting jewelry on their collars. I would say that's a very extremist measure, especially given that most Americans, according to poll after poll after poll, believe abortion should really just stop after about, I don't know, 6 months or so. After that, you might as well deliver the baby unless it would be damaging or lethal to you or something. So they are way out of line with the mainstream of America, way out of line with the mainstream of their party, in fact. Actually, I do believe I got that poll wrong that I was quoting. It was 66% of Democrats believe that abortion in the third trimester is wrong. But that doesn't stop the Democrat Party at large, doesn't stop their politicians in office. I'm assuming this has something to do with the fact that Planned Parenthood is a mega donor to the Democrat Party. Democrats they managed to get more and more taxpayer money for Planned Parenthood every year. Then Planned Parenthood managed to get some more and more donations to the Democrat politicians every year. Seems to be a bit of a money laundering scheme, if you ask me. Would Planned Parenthood have all this money to donate if they didn't have all of our taxpayer money going to them? But it is the sixth state of the Democrat Party that we are at now. They adorn themselves with beautiful items to celebrate killing babies outside the womb. Folks, we got more Silker Joe Show coming up after this break, so I hope you will stick with us.
This report is sponsored by Coca-Cola. Start your new year with real Coke taste and zero sugar. Coke Zero Sugar is now available at participating Burger King restaurants. Coke Zero Sugar will fuel your new year with that great Coke taste. Satisfy your hunger and enjoy Coke Zero Sugar with a piping hot breakfast sandwich, like a sausage, egg, and cheese croissant sandwich. Its sizzling sausage, fluffy egg, and melted American cheese on a toasted croissant makes for a delicious breakfast to start your morning right. And don't forget the crispy hash browns. Or if the flame-grilled Whopper sandwich, BK Royal Crispy Chicken Sandwich, or chicken fries are your fave, you are in luck, because all Burger King menu items pair perfectly with an ice-cold Coke Zero Sugar. It's the perfect no-sugar sparkling beverage that goes great with everything. Coke Zero Sugar is a great way to start 2023. And since you rule, you can enjoy it all year, too, at participating U.S. Burger King restaurants.
According to the new State of Security Preparedness 2023 study released by Avanti, approximately half of respondents said they are very prepared to meet the growing threat landscape, but expected safeguards are ignored a third of the time, and leaders are actually four times more likely to be victims of phishing compared to office workers. Avanti CEO Jeff Abbott.
Avanti surveyed 6,500 executive leaders, cybersecurity professionals, and office workers globally to understand the perception of today's cybersecurity threats and to find out how companies are preparing for next-generation cyber terror threats. The overwhelming majority of security professionals and leaders, 97%, told us their organizations are as prepared or more prepared today than 1 year ago. However, the threat of the unknown is as real as ever. In fact, only one in five of those same cybersecurity professionals would wager a chocolate bar on the state of their readiness.
To learn more, visit avanti.com/cybersecurityreport.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy, and I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much, from the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night and every moment in between. It really is so special, and boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
My baby brother, a father.
Come on, it's time for his nap.
Whoa, he can't sleep on his stomach. Babies should always sleep on their backs in a safety-approved crib, and the sleep area should be clear of blankets, toys, and other loose or soft items. It reduces the risk of SIDS.
SIDS?
You know, sudden infant death syndrome.
Guess I need to start studying up on safe sleep for little man here. Being his favorite uncle comes with big responsibilities.
For more information, visit safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov, sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. You want to give your baby everything, so start with a safe sleep area. Babies younger than one should always be placed to sleep on their backs on a firm and flat surface, like a safety-approved crib. And keep blankets, pillows, and other soft or loose items out of the crib when the baby is in it. Learn more about safe sleep for babies at safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Thank you for sticking with the Silk Road Joe Show for this hour. We are wrapping up now with David Dearson, attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation. David, appreciate you being here on the Silk Road Joe Show. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing well, Joe. Thanks very much, and it's a pleasure to join you here.
Hey, happy to have you. I don't know, sometimes California, though, they seem like another country rather than another state. I just heard that Gavin Newsom was like planning to start taxing your tax refund, but it's not the worst thing that they're doing out there. Actually, right now, something that you're all working on is there's a man who's retired and on a fixed income, and they're trying to make him homeless because his houseboat might harm eelgrass. What is that about?
Yeah, that's right, Joe. This is a pretty wild story. Mr. Knight, as you say, is on a fixed income and lives in a houseboat there in Richardson Bay. He's lived there for about 20 years, and it's his only home. Recently, the Richardson Bay Regional Authority, which is a multi-jurisdictional government agency up there in the Bay Area, they decided that something needed to be done to protect the eelgrass at the bottom of the bay, and they needed people to stop anchoring their boats there in the bay because they were concerned that the boats were causing ecological damage to the eelgrass. So they instituted a buyback program, and they went around to all the boat owners saying, we'll offer you some money to sell us your boat. And they offered Mr. Knight about $5,000 on the condition that if he became homeless after the transaction, then he would forfeit his right to the payment. Well, obviously, that's not going to work because the boat is his home, and $5,000 is not enough for him to sell that. And even if he did, he would certainly, by necessity, become homeless, at least for some time afterwards. And so ultimately, he refused to sell them the boat. Well, they figured, we tried asking nicely. Well, now we're just going to take it from you. So they slap a notice on it, and they say, this is marine debris, and in 10 days, it's going to be ours. Now, there are specific statutory requirements in California for what constitutes marine debris, Joe, and this ain't it. It's true that the government in some cases is allowed to confiscate and get rid of inoperable, unseaworthy, and worthless vessels. But Mr. Knight's boat is none of those things. It's perfectly operable. It sails just fine. And it's certainly worth a great deal to Mr. Knight, again, considering it's his only home. But the government isn't too concerned about that. They say, well, this is just trash, and we're going to take it from you in 10 days.
That is absolutely disgusting. And why bother having laws at all if the government's not going to obey them, I guess, because why should the citizens obey the laws for that matter if the government won't adhere to them? This is really a dangerous precedent as well, because if they can just say, oh, your place of residence is this now because we say it is, what other laws will they disrespect? What other property laws will they disrespect? I guess the gas stove ban in California became that much easier.
Right. Right. Yeah, no question. I mean, it's great to see their excuse for why they consider this to be marine debris. In their papers they filed in court, they argued, well, we've never personally seen it sail. Okay, so that's their proof that it can't sail, is that they've never seen it sail. Now, they have seen it in two different places, but they didn't actually see it move from point A to point B. So as far as they're concerned, that's enough proof that the vessel is not seaworthy and that they can just come in and take it without any compensation. Obviously,
do they happen to be atheists as well?
Excuse me, what's that?
I just said, do they happen to be atheists as well? Because this idea is that if they don't believe it moves because they haven't seen it move, I'm sure there's a lot of other stuff they don't believe in.
Yeah, it does raise questions about their inductive reasoning capabilities. I don't know about their religious faith, but I can say that the Constitution says differently. The Fourth Amendment says you can't unreasonably seize property. The Fifth Amendment says you can't take property without just compensation. And it also says the California Constitution says both of those things. It also says you can't take someone's property without due process. And I think that's one of the most frustrating things about this is they slap that notice on there and they say, well, we're going to take this from you. Have 10 days, to gather your belongings before we just seize this thing. With no opportunity for him to have any kind of hearing or to present his argument that that the boat is not debris at all. In fact, it's his home. And how insulting to refer to someone's home as just debris.
And all this, too, just they say it's to protect eelgrass. That's not endangered in any way, from what I can tell. It's actually quite common, and many people refer to it as seaweed.
Yeah, I'll be honest, Joe. I'm not an ecologist. For all I know, it's absolutely vital that we protect the seagrass at the bottom of Richardson Bay. I don't know if that's true or not. But either way, you can't protect the seagrass at the expense of people's constitutional rights. So if you want to seize someone's property to protect the seagrass, well, okay. But as you say, you better follow the law while you're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just a I'm just mentioning that because it seems to be a bizarre excuse to seize someone's property to protect something that doesn't need protecting at all.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I guess they have some funny priorities over there at the at the Richardson Bay Regional Authority.
Mm-hmm. So where does this go from here? Has the 10 days already elapsed? And what happens at the end of that? Has there been some sort of injunction against it? Or while this goes through trial, will he end up homeless?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We got a preliminary injunction from the court who's preserving the status quo while we argue about the issues. So fortunately, there's been a stay on that 10-day period. They can't seize his boat until we've hashed out these constitutional arguments. So we're feeling good about having that injunction. And we're scheduled for a trial on the merits later this year in the fall.
And we'll have to see how it goes from here. I just hate to think that people are getting evicted from their homes in such a callous, anti-legal matter. And other states, other attorneys might follow on to this thing if this precedent is set. David Dearson, attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation, appreciate you being on the Silk or Joe show. We'll have to keep an eye on this because of the implications it'll have nationwide if they're allowed to get away with such abuses of power. And folks, appreciate you tuning into the Silk or Joe show today. You can find out more about us at MainStreetRadioNetwork.com, on social media, Getter, GETTR.com, at Silk or Joe show. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities, so please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.